Going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment. I'm Harold Fisher. Another very busy news week, and we're dissecting some of the top and most interesting stories of the week. Would the Vision Zero DC Act make streets safer? Are you willing to pay a toll to drive in downtown DC? President Trump releases his immigration plan. United Medical Center targeted for closing by the DC Council. Lots to talk about with my guests tonight. Robin Hamilton, reporter and host with DCW 50, Raynard Jackson, conservative political analyst and president of Raynard Jackson and Associates, and Chanya Johnson, policy advocate. And you, lines are open. Give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Hey, everybody.
Hey.
All right, let's get right into this. Council member Charles Allen proposing a safer street. This is not a crime bill. This is a pedestrian traffic related measure, proposing that we stop making right turns on reds in some places, and just making sure that we are watching those crosswalks and in some cases handing out citations and tickets and the like. Good idea, bad idea, Robin? What do you think?
You know, I don't have a problem with it. And I say that because I feel like we constantly hear about issues with people getting hit on their bikes, pedestrian issues. I just feel like it's really congested in the city. It's hard. It's stressful. You know, there's now little scooters on the street. I know there's some people who have problems with it, but I just, you know, I'm stressed driving through the streets. So I feel like anything that makes it easier, I'm okay with it.
Well, you may need to get a bigger car. Bigger cars, less stress. What do you think, Chanya?
What I think is I definitely support the idea. I would say of safe streets. I do support the idea of, you know, making sure that the pedestrians are safe and everything. However, there was a piece of it that I was like, I don't know about that. Let DC police do their job. Law enforcement do their jobs. The ticketers do their jobs and give people tickets. But
citizen enforcement do not do that.
Yeah. And that, for various reasons, you have people picking up phones, calling folks because they just, you know, on the beach because they black. Whatever the case may be. I'm just saying, like, you're going to now be policing parking spaces and how people are going across crosswalks. I think we should be responsible citizens here in the district and wherever else we live. But I do support the idea of making sure our streets are safe. But citizens to citizens giving our tickets, no.
I agree with that.
I don't support that.
Wow. Well, today marks the first day of the transition from D.C. being Chocolate City to being a white city.
And that's what this legislation is.
No. It just shows you, of all the issues facing D.C., the streets are not one of the biggest problems. And this shows you have all these councilmen who have no institutional memory of D.C. the way it used to be. And so all these, this influx of new people, especially white, are about to take over D.C. And I figured the next D.C. mayor will be a white mayor.
Well, what does that have to do with sacred streets and watching the crosswalks?
Well, because number one,
I mean, black
if you go into the black community and you ask them what the top 10 issues are in D.C., the streets and the crosswalks will not show up in the top 100.
Yeah, but that may be true. And if you want to just talk about all of the top 10 issues or the top 5, I could list many of them. But this particular one, I think.
Is that really a problem in D.C.? How many people have been killed in D.C.? by getting hit in the crosswalk. Very
I mean,
few.
One of the reports states that in the last year, the same time this last year was 10, the fatalities. I don't know about the other, you know, hits and things like that. But I will say we do need safe streets. I drive in from Maryland every morning along Route 1, so I see everyday people walking. I see young people, 6 and 7 year old kids walking to the schools, crossing those streets. So I do believe the streets need to be safe. However, I stand by the point that we should not have citizens policing the streets. I think citizens need to drive properly, be aware what the speed limits are, and comply, you know, with the law. But don't be giving me no ticket. I'm sorry.
And here's the other piece, too. This isn't just about people walking. This is about people biking. Mm-hmm. And this is about people being cognizant of not being in the crosswalks at stop signs.
That's right.
Or red lights, mm-hmm. for example. Because if you are walking and you're standing there being a law-abiding citizen and getting ready to step off a curb, if you have to walk around the car, is that inconvenient? Absolutely. But you know what the law always says? Pedestrians, smaller vehicles such as bikes, they always have the right of way.
Yeah, but Harold, this is the first step towards, well, not the first step, a continuation of liberal politicians in major cities ultimately trying to ban the usage of cars in their cities.
You think so?
No question. California,
no, no.
New York, same thing. Chicago, same thing. It's to the point now, on my way to the studio, I almost ran over a person on purpose because Harold, I'm not exaggerating. This guy stood in front of my car and said, "What, you gonna hit me?" And I said, "Yeah, you keep standing in front of my car, I will run you over."
What color was he?
He was a brother.
There you go.
Why are you trying to hit the brother? That's right. What I want to know. Right. Right.
Listen, come on.
I don't know about this one.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are at the Reporters Roundtable. Lots to talk about right now happening in the district and, of course, nationally. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Now, here's the, you know, the issue, and I don't believe that citizens should be writing tickets. Okay. Ain't nobody got time for that. But I really do believe that, that pedestrians also need to watch where they're going, stay out of their phones, and use the crosswalk.
I agree completely. There's nothing that drives me more crazy than when they walk in across the crosswalk and their head is on, looking down on their phone. They have no clue.
And earbuds. So yeah. they can't hear.
I know.
They can't see.
I know.
And they're walking across New York Avenue.
Yeah.
On the bridge,
yes.
Before Florida Avenue, and then, you know, come on.
Right.
Well,
right.
The one thing I will say this is, and you know, I'm always about solutions, providing solutions. So if the council members are listening, I would say this, they could create a campaign where they have signage up. So there's things that I definitely pay attention to. If I see a sign that says rocks are falling, I'm paying attention. So if you know that is a high traffic area where there are incidents of fatalities, people being hit, put up some type of signage. The pedestrian sees and the driver sees. So hopefully we both can then be very responsible when we're approaching an intersection or that area. So in your high traffic areas where you have high incidence of accidents, mm-hmm. you should definitely have some type of signage and let that be your campaign to make people aware of safe streets.
But how do you see that when your face is buried in your phone?
Well, I think over time, as you're constantly walking that way, you begin to pay attention, hopefully, to the area. Maybe there's something bleaking. Maybe there's some noise or something that will get people's attention. But again, they got earbuds and they face down. So I don't know. But for the ones that still don't have all of that and standing in the middle of the street thinking, you know, it's just like, can you come up? Let's
Harold,
do this together.
This is another case of a solution looking for a problem.
You think so?
No.
But it's not a problem in D.C.
Well, but some, no, not some.
To some people.
Some people would also say that this is addressing the growing gentrification problem because,
Because of gentrification, black folks didn't care about safety?
No.
They should have addressed it a long time ago and made sure those signs was up there. That's all I'm saying.
What I'm saying is prior to the influx of gentrification in this issue and the inclusion of bike lanes, being respectful to black girls' bike and black folks' bike and all of that, but we really didn't talk about those organizations when it was Chocolate City. It was the Metro, mm-hmm. and let me tell my HDC Transit. Nobody was biking to work. Mm-hmm. Okay, now we have people biking to work. Some of them are people of color, but the lion's share of them are not. Mm-hmm. And so this kind of situation is trying to make provisions for the growing population of people who are biking to work.
Oh, white.
Yeah, well, you know, that's the way it is.
Because I ain't biking to work, but okay. I don't want to mess my hair up.
Yeah, not down Route 1. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Sid, calling from Virginia. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hey, thank you. I know the brother over there touched on another topic that I wanted to talk about. I'm not even black, but I can make that observation. I agree with him where what's happening, it's a systematic thing. They do it very subtly. You uproot the people by, you know, developing new properties and breaking down the old ones. So the old black folks who was there in the D.C. 40 years ago, they can't afford their neighborhood anymore. So they have no choice but to move out. So that's a little slick way of doing it without being very open, okay? And the other thing is the safety issue. They got to eliminate those biking lanes, period, because, first of all, you got people walking everywhere, and then bikers don't follow the rules. We're supposed to watch out for their safety. They weave in and out of cars, run through the red lights and everything, and I have no idea the biker's like going in between cars and you know what I mean? So it's like kind of hypocritical that we're supposed to watch out for their safety, but then they don't follow the rules. Anyway, that's all I got. I mean, I got a lot to say, but that's all I got.
Thank you so much, Sid. Let's go to Maryland. Maryland, calling from Virginia. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I just have two comments.
Go ahead.
One of it, I think a lot of what they're doing, the changes they're making, has to do with revenue for the district. And another thing is, if you're going to police anybody, police the people that's walking across the street on their cell phones. Because I'm not even from D.C., and I have a problem when I come to D.C. when people just walking across the street and ain't even paying attention to the traffic. So those are just a couple of things that I feel that there's a problem with. They're trying to build revenue, and they're trying to ticket everyone.
Mm. Yeah. Well, I agree. Thank you so much for your comment.
That is a really good point, to ticket people who are not paying attention, who are on their phones. I think that would get people to pay attention.
I think it would. My other concern about that is that it could possibly increase the number of, if we're talking about police officers or traffic enforcement officers, that it could very well increase the conflict mm-hmm. with people on the street mm-hmm. and police officers.
Community policing.
Because not everybody, if you get a jaywalking ticket.
I've never got a jaywalk ticket. I was just going to bring that up. Like, yeah. Somebody tell me, so I don't even know if people are going to really give out citizen traffic tickets. It's just like citizen arrests. How many have you ever been arrested? Well, maybe. Yes.
yes. Raynard.
Maybe. But I'm just saying, I don't know. I don't know in any case where someone was arrested by another citizen or someone that have received a jaywalking ticket. I just don't know. So I don't know how effective this will be with citizens just arbitrarily saying, oh, I'm going to sit on my porch and watch.
But let us
Who
assume, let's throw the citizen piece out and let's talk about sworn officers or traffic enforcement officers, and someone is jaywalking. You know, not everyone is going to perhaps be as civil as you if you are walking against traffic, not in the crosswalk, and then you get stopped by an officer and mm-hmm. perhaps you're late for work or coming back from lunch or something like that. There's going to be conflict. So I think there needs to be a lot of care.
Yeah.
When you're talking about giving people citations. Let us go to Bob. Bob calling from Washington, D.C. Thanks for calling, Bob. What's on your mind?
Hello. Good evening. I'd just like to say about the pedestrians and stuff. When I grew up in Southeast, I was taught in elementary school, look both ways mm-hmm. and you live more days. Okay? Don't go out there and try to fight a car, because people in cars are texting, they're talking, they're drinking, they're driving or whatever. Why would you go stand in the middle of the street or walk in front of a moving car? You need to look. If a car is coming, give him the right of way. Let him go. Don't stand in the crosswalk. I got the right of way. You could be right but you could be dead right.
Okay.
Take care of yourself first.
There you go, Charles.
Look both ways, you live more days. They need to preach that in elementary school so these kids will stop running across the street, take for granted that the white line is going to save them, or once they get off a school bus, they can just zip right across the street, because you don't know if somebody's drinking, driving, smoking, doing whatever they're doing. You're supposed to take it like, hey, they could kill me with that car. Don't fight a car.
Okay.
The car can hurt you.
Well, Bob, thank you so much. If you're still on the line, Jill in D.C., Charles in D.C., stay with us. We're definitely going to take your phone call. But I want to mention before the break another issue that really kind of piggybacks on this. And this is this Washington Post Shar School poll about a study that the district wants to do regarding congestion tolls for downtown D.C. This is something that I want to start with Chanya about.
Oh, my.
Because she comes in from Maryland. I come in from Maryland. I pay a toll going through the tunnels already. And I love my city.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of like, do you need a pass to go?
Let me just say this. Okay, so y'all didn't even know this about me, but just last week somebody posted on social media and it was ranting about getting tickets. And so I actually started a Facebook page that's called Damn Shame DC. And it's a damn shame that I got two tickets when I should have just gotten one because the meter expired.
Oh.
I didn't even want to take off from work. The
meter expired, so that's one.
And then they said basically I was parked illegally or improperly. Well, give me one ticket.
Right.
Because if the meter expires, it's one or the other.
Right, right.
I don't know, but I sent it to my friends over at the D.C. Council. I said, y'all got to look at this. But I did start the little page just because I was like, damn shame, D.C.
I need to join that Facebook page.
All I know is I was just really angry and I just did not have the time. But here's the thing. No, I don't believe they should give me a tow. I am coming here. I'm spending my lunch money.
That's right.
I'm driving into your city. I'm making it a better place for the, you know, the citizens and the constituency here in the district. So please do not toll me. No, I don't want to pay a toll.
Well, the poll says that an average of 63% of the people who took this or participated in the poll say no congestion toll. D.C., Maryland, Virginia. It doesn't matter. I'll start with you, Robin, before the break. Where are you coming from before you come into the district?
No, I'm actually coming from Capitol Heights.
So you're one of the ones who say, yes, pay the toll so that my sidewalks can be repaired.
No, but I'm with you. I feel like if you are going into D.C. and you already pay a toll and you're working and you're paying on your lunch break and you're shopping, what have you, you are making a contribution. And I get the congestion issue. I do. But I feel like there are other ways to, you know, mitigate the crowd. And I'm not sure what that is, but I don't think punishing people who have to go into the city, because that's what it feels like.
The federal government gonna pay for it at the end of the day. That's all I'm saying.
Right.
Yeah, how about that? I need to take a break. But when we come back, we're going to talk to Jill calling from D.C., Charles calling from D.C. And lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Lots to talk about. Stay with us. Do not hang up. You will be able to hear the program. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. This conversation continues on Sirius XM Channel 141 in just a few seconds.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU, and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We are at the Reporters Roundtable talking about some of the top stories of the week. Certainly most of them quite eye-popping. My guests are Robin Hamilton, reporter and host with DCW50, Renard Jackson, conservative political analyst and president of Renard Jackson and Associates, and Chanya Johnson, a policy advocate. Lines are open at 202-319-7810. 212-319-7810. Renard, before I go to the phone lines, yes to a toll, no to a congestion toll in D.C.
Heck no. I got 535 reasons why it won't happen, called members of Congress. They're not going to allow that to happen because a lot of these guys are driving into town, and they're going to view that as a tax, which it is, number one. But again, Harold, you have me back on your show 2 or 3 years from now. This is all about outlawing cars in major metropolitan cities. This is what this is all about.
Well, I would agree with you that this is certainly an attempt to convince drivers or to reduce the number of cars in these congested areas. As we know, depending on which survey you listen to, which study you read, D.C. and L.A., constantly trying to win the award for the most congested metropolitan areas. And yes, it is a travesty. No one likes, no one likes congestion. Because I must admit, if I drive into D.C., this is just obscene to me, on a Sunday afternoon, and I am in a traffic backup before I even get to the city. Where are these people going?
Yeah.
You all should be at home while I'm trying to get to where I'm going.
But here's another problem, Harold, that no one's talking about. I live in Alexandria, Virginia, and I normally take the train in. But the end of this month, the metro from where I live is going to be closed for 3 months. Right. Everything south of Washington National Airport. If I drive back and forth, well, which I'll have to do for that 3 months, I'm not getting back on a train. Mm-hmm. When they open back up the station, they've lost a rider. Now I will be driving back and forth because I'll get used to driving again. And it's going to be hard for me to go back on that train.
It is a pickle. There's no question about it. Let me go back to the phone lines. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Jill calling from D.C. Hey, Jill, what's on your mind?
Hello, everyone. I just wanted to say that listening to the discussion and the first two topics that you guys have talked about, I feel like as a D.C. resident, it's simply another way to tax us. Whether we are a pedestrian or whether we are in a, whether we live in Maryland or Virginia, we're just trying to get into the city. It's all about the district trying to get more money out of our pockets. And it is frustrating. You would think these topics are not major and that they could be handled, as one of your guests talked about, with marketing to make people aware of safety. At least start there before you start with taxing people. But that's my feedback.
Well, there you go. Jill, thank you so much. I appreciate it. Let's talk a little bit about immigration. And I'm going to start with Renard because I'm sure he is just extremely interested in talking about this issue. Yesterday, President Trump announced his immigration plan, moving to a merit-based system where immigrants who have various and sundry skills and who would pass a civics exam would be at the top of the heap when it comes to getting into the country. Good idea, Renard, or bad idea?
It's a great idea. I don't think the president went far enough on this issue because we have to protect American citizens first. And with this whole issue of immigration, whether it's legal or illegal, guess who's been hurt most by this? Low and underskilled black folks are being most negatively impacted
what
by
low
this
and
issue.
Underskilled?
And also, where are you getting those facts? I'm sorry. Like, where yeah, tell me. I know.
BLS, Bureau of Labor
well,
Labor
I need
Statistics.
I need some water. I need some water.
What are the statistics? I mean, really, specifically, because there are plenty of studies
that
have said that's
not true. There was an article in the
Wall
Street Journal last week that I read. Despite the historic low unemployment rate in the black community, black wages are stagnant. Why? Because Economics 101 says the more cheap labor you inject into the workforce, the more depressed the wages are. That's why black wages do not go up.
Are you saying the immigration people that are coming are getting cheaper wages?
Or, yes, the depressing way. Okay, for example,
so,
in Chicago.
Here's the thing. All I'm going to say is this. I just had a conversation, and I won't go into a whole lot of details because I need to protect our constituents in the great state of Ohio. But what I will say is this. There is HR 14 or 1044, and that bill specifically sought to make sure that they remove the cap or increase the cap to 15% as opposed to 7%. If Trump's bill or this immigration proposal was to go, our country is then going to be full of Indian folks because it's for H-1B, those skilled people.
That.
So it's not even the low-wage workers. Mm-hmm. Those are like seasonal workers that are coming to our...
No, that's not true.
No, listen, it's a combination, but what I'm saying is this. Majority of them have been skilled, and it's China and it's India.
That's not true.
Yes, it is. I'm just telling you.
Let me give you a classic example of what happened last year.
You can give me one, but I'm just telling you.
I raided a bakery in Chicago that had 100 illegals working there. They deported the 100 illegals.
But how many of us really were working in the bakery?
Let him make his point.
Go ahead.
And they hired 100 black folks in Chicago to replace the illegals. The illegals were getting paid $5, $10 an hour. These black folks who took the same job, American citizens, were making $20, $25 an hour for doing the same work. That's what illegal immigration does.
But as it relates to the Trump plan, so are you suggesting that they want higher educated, higher skilled brown people so the black folks can take the really, really bad jobs again?
Well, no. What Trump is doing with what he, again, I think he should have gone a lot further. I don't support all these H-1B visas because you have 4,000 engineers that got laid off when NASA shut down the space program in Florida.
That had nothing to do with immigration.
Shutting down
NASA, for example, and ending the space shuttle program.
I agree with you. I'm saying
during the Obama administration was extremely, and you're talking to a Trekkie. Yeah, it broke my heart.
I'm saying that the 4,000 engineers that were laid off, these guys, a lot of them still have not been gainfully employed, so we don't need to import them from India.
That's because of this policy here. Because of this policy, I believe it's why one of the reasons why we can't get our skilled workers back to work because we're creating these data centers that is housing the people from China who have the H-1B visas, and then your people from India, because that's what our country is going to look like. There's not going to be a diversity of sector, nor will there be a diversity of people that are coming from other countries. Can we get some people from other countries that look like us? That's all I'm saying, because we're not the ones that are even able to apply for the H-1B visas because the queue is so full of maybe 400-some thousand people of Indian descent trying to come into our country.
I agree with you.
We can't even get on the list. So that's why I'm saying I think that it's faulty. I do believe the conversation on immigration need to be had, but we're not talking about the immigrants that are already in our country, those students that are here under DACA and all the other ways they're here because of 241i. I mean, there's a lot
of... And this plan doesn't even address DACA.
No, it doesn't. And I also resent the fact, you know, just going beyond that, this idea of pitting brown people against brown people, I really, really don't like that. And number two, I really find a high level of hypocrisy because we're not going to call out anyone in the administration, but I wonder how many of them would be able to pass a citizenship test. I wonder
how
if certain people's spouses.
But that's irrelevant. We're citizens.
No,
I can set up any barriers I want for a non-citizen.
People's spouses have gotten here because they knew someone or because they had a relative who got them.
Well, we need to shut down the border totally.
I just do not see that the same type of standards are being held for people who may look differently.
Not to mention the president even said earlier in his administration, why can't we have people who were of European descent? So do you think that this immigration policy would be applicable to people of European descent?
Our federal laws are universally applied.
One would hope.
You don't have separate laws on the federal
level. No, you don't have separate laws, but you have people within these institutions
who interpret them
exactly. Who don't really look like us, who are saying, I just want these people over here who speak the native language of
X, Y, and Z, because they are the ones who enforce these things.
And who is to determine what kind of high level skill you have.
Yes.
You look at the labor force, and for example in Australia, they have a shortage of registered nurses. So if you're looking to import more citizens into Australia, they're looking number one at who has a nursing degree. That's their top of their pecking order. So what do we need in the U.S.
But
as far as
what I know
labor?
For sure is that, well, you're not going to get them from Haiti. You're not going to get them from countries where there are more minorities, only because those people don't have those skills, and they're trying to come to our country to get those skills to be able to take care of their families and have a better life.
I don't support that at all.
I'm just,
no,
why
let
not?
Them go somewhere else.
No, I think they should come to America. I'm very much open.
We have so many American citizens that need help, that need housing.
I agree. I agree, and there should be systems in place to be able to help them, so we should be advocating for
but
those
we can't do them
systems.
Both at the same
yes,
time.
We can.
No, we can.
You cannot say we can't chew
gum and walk
up at the same
home,
time.
We got veterans coming home sleeping under bridges in
but
Houston,
guess what?
Texas.
And there's a system in place for that, and they should have people helping those veterans get exactly what they need. They should be reaching out to their congresspeople and their local elected officials to get what it is they need. We cannot say that we can't do it all at one time, because guess what? We're doing everything else we need to do
okay,
when it comes
so can
to
we
DOD.
Deport those in the country illegally all at the same time?
Actually, president. Oh, yeah. He is already doing it.
He already doing it. Comparing immigration to our war veterans coming back.
Yeah, we
you're comparing apples and antelopes
yeah,
here.
Yeah.
These are completely
that is why
we have a Veterans Administration
totally
and we have Homeland
budget.
Security
totally
as well as
do you understand that Muriel Bowser, the mayor of D.C., she allocates $500,000 a year to give free legal advice to illegals in D.C. Well, you got homeless folks a block, a mile from here that could use that money.
Yeah, that's true. But these are two totally different concerns and issues. You cannot compare the undocumented coming here to the homeless population.
Yeah, that means less money for American citizens who are homeless.
Okay, so you just say you want to build a wall.
Well, not only build a wall, but anyone that's not legally, they got to go. They got to go, period.
Come on. Even the children that was here at 2 years old.
Yes.
And didn't, okay.
Yes.
I don't know. I don't believe that, because they don't know where they're going to.
My
they have
first
no family.
Obligation as a Christian, and even if you're not a Christian, is to take care of your own family.
And that's your family, because they were here.
I'm talking about American citizens.
But they were born here. Those kids were born here.
They're legal by law.
Okay.
But their parents, if they're illegal, got to go.
But how, okay.
So he will probably be one of the first people to defund support for the Statue of Liberty. No more give us your tired, your poor, your...
No,
your
give huddled. Us your tired and huddled masses who come through legally.
Okay. There you go. 202-319-7810. Love you. 202-319-7810. You can charge him with assault for slapping you on your arm.
Hey. The associates got deep pockets. The associates got deep pockets. Yes.
Well, speaking of deep pockets, United Medical Center, the only hospital east of the Anacostia, really needs deep pockets and some more stuff. Unfortunately, just this week, the D.C. Council voted in the first reading to slowly defund and target it for closing. This is a really difficult issue, because it's not just about the hospital. It is about the people that the hospital has been serving for decades. There was a report earlier this week that United Medical Center was one of the top worst hospitals, in the nation. And the council wants to start to defund it from $40 million, their contribution, from $40 million to $15 million. That's a lot of money, Rob.
That's a lot of money, and I'm really conflicted, because from what I read about it, I haven't read a ton about it, but it sounds like it's become a money pit. And yet, what is going to happen in terms of the accessibility? What is going to happen to the people who don't have anywhere to go or can't afford to go to another hospital, who don't have the means? It's really difficult, and you have to wonder, how did it get to this point?
But, Harold, I was going to say, Robin, I'd love to see if you agree with me. Again, this is all about forcing native D.C. folks into PG County. This is all about gentrification.
And that has been happening.
Because, you know, guess what? The people in Ward, you know, 1, 2, and 3, they go to Georgetown Hospital anyway. And our Sibley. We're talking about a specific demographic group of people who the city is forcing out. So all the things we've talked about on your show today, Harold, is about turning D.C. into White City versus Chocolate City. Wow.
So you some would argue that the plan for George Washington University to manage the new hospital, and there was an amendment also that was approved that includes Howard University in that, and that's still a discussion. The mayor has given pushback to that. George Washington University hospital management has given a great deal of pushback, but you know that's a side issue. As I said, the people east of the river, they need good medical care. There have been numerous reports about infant mortality.
But they won't be here much longer.
What do you mean?
They're going to be pushed out to the county.
I think that is one of the things that Marion Barry talked about prior to his death.
Whether or not, and I my heart goes out to the people in that community. But what I will say is this: I think that you know we're doing our community a huge disservice. Somebody's going to live there, and somebody's going to need access services.
Yeah.
So if you are not able to have the full fledged hospital. As big, it could be a community health center. It can be a smaller version of a hospital that can still meet the needs of its constituents in the community over there.
Once they push them up,
they're going to probably build condos and some foolishness.
Exactly.
But what I'm saying is somebody in the city on that east of the river over there or wherever who have their best interest of the people should go before the council and say, hey, don't just wipe it out. Because people are still going to need access to services, regardless to who you are. Mm-hmm. You're going to need access.
But also understand, this isn't just about quote unquote services. With the closing of Provident Hospital, there was a report just last week saying that emergency room calls to Howard University Hospital and some of the other hospitals. In the district, including GW, have increased exponentially because there is no emergency service at Provident. And certainly, you know, the maternity ward at UMC shut down, obviously, because of health concerns. But if we can't just do a community center over there.
Not just a community center, a smaller scale
There has to be emergency services,
a full-fledged hospital, but it may not have to operate at the level that it is now, but they still need to provide services. So I'm saying keep everything that you think any other regular community would need, they're going to need too, but just do it on a smaller scale.
But you're trying to inject logic and common sense into this conversation. This is about, have you driven in Ward 7 and 8 late? They put Homeland Security, that old St. Elizabeth's Hospital. You got about 3,000 or 4,000 people working there now. You got the metro station at Anacostia. Once they get the demographics they want there, these hospitals that you're talking about and these centers will be built. But not
until
they push the people out.
They're
going to
need it anyway. So don't, I mean, but that's because they don't have the best interests of their constituents.
I
believe there should be someone over there advocating for the people to ensure they continue. But it doesn't matter whether or not you vote.
It does not.
I believe that whether or not I vote for you or not, I still need to have access to services. That's all I'm saying.
You do. Let me go to Ronaldo. Ronaldo calling from D.C. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hey, good afternoon. How are you good folks doing?
Doing just
fine. Good, good.
And my radio is down, and if I sound a little echoey, that's because I'm on speakerphone. Is it clear enough for you?
Yeah, you go right ahead. We can hear you just fine.
First and foremost, thank you for taking my phone call.
Sure.
Secondly, born, raised, bred, and still thankful to be living in Washington, D.C., 66 years old.
All right.
I've seen this place go from that small, sleepy town to a megatropolis that it is at present. My concern is this. The mayor, if she were on fire, I wouldn't pour water on her.
Oh, my.
No. She has literally sold this city to the developers. My concern is this. If you've got developers like Toll Brothers, Clark, Acreage, yeah, I'm throwing out names, just to name a few, that can develop these properties on 8th Street where I am right now, Union Station, Noma, where I'm going to in a moment, and all up and down 7th, 14th, and the other streets, why can't they be held accountable to develop the neighborhoods in Southeast, i.e. Robinson Place, Eli Place, G Street, Minnesota, Benning, and the like?
So let me stop you right there, Ronaldo, because I think you will probably be able to relate to this. 10 years ago, 15 years ago, that list that you just shared with us could have also included H Street. But now it doesn't, because H Street is developed. So I'm not so sure that the point is completely valid. It is not about development. It is about who was there after or during the development. And I think that we, for longtime residents or people who were born here, like myself, there needs to be a bit of a come to Jesus moment where we need to address the changes that were happening. As I was saying to Renard, Marion Barry, before he died, issued the same kind of warning. And this is a conversation I've had for quite some time when we see, for example, what had happened to LaDroit Park, just south of Howard University. I happen to like classic homes, but the black person sitting next to me may say, that's not classic, that's old. and then you may have someone who may happen to be white who comes in because the black person next to me thinks that it's old and their mama owned the house and mama has either passed on. They don't want that house. They want to move to Upper Marlboro. They want to move to Woodmore. They want to move to Bethesda. They want to move to Alexandria and they want to sell that house. And then someone comes in, buys it for a song, for $40,000, puts an additional $50,000 in it, strips 30 years or 40 years of paint off of the burled walnut and the marble fireplaces and all of that, and you turn it into this land of milk and honey that we are now seeing. Mm-hmm. And so I think that while we can complain about the mayor, you can do that if you want. But I think that we also need to look at what was missed because we didn't like old. We wanted new. We didn't want to put the work that some would say the newcomers have put in to make these communities what they've been made. And then they bring with them what? Political power, voices, organization, advocacy. All of those things and in some cases newscasters.
And three stories.
That's right. So Ronaldo, I think we can dwell on the past or we can act on the now with an eye toward the future.
You know what?
Go ahead, Ronaldo, and then I'm gonna let Chanya speak on it.
What I would truly like to see, first and foremost, we have a beautiful city here. I get all over town, and I meet people all over town.
Mm-hmm.
And they come from all around the world, and they love our city. What I would like to see is equity. Mm-hmm. The same developers, like I say, that are developing some of these neighborhoods, look at Sursum Quarters. Sursum Quarters was sold for $60 million to a company that they could be held accountable to develop an area over in Southeast or Northeast. But they just got that property for a song and a dance. You know, when it comes back on the market, we won't be able to live there. Mm-mm. But what I'm saying is, not only do I want some equity, I want some accountability to our city council, which incidentally, as you say, since the Honorable Mayor for Life has gone on, it's a different city council. Look, we got a city council now talking about citizens should write tickets.
Yeah.
Boy, I tell you, that's going to go over real good on Alabama Avenue.
Renaldo, thank you so much for your for your wit and wisdom. So I'm going to thank you for your phone call, Chanya. Go right ahead.
Well, and I just wanted to say, you know, I try to be a liberal problem solver. So I just would make the appeal to the good people of the city council to look at options of maybe a grant type program for people who are in their homes who don't want to give them up, yeah. who probably just don't have the resources to rebuild and strip that paint off and be able to see what they could see, the beauty that someone else have. Maybe they can create something similar to mm-hmm. that. I know in New Orleans, they did the Road Home Program and helped people to get back into their homes. And while this is not because of a hurricane or anything like that, I think if you want to keep the richness of the culture of the black yes. people that are here in the city, you have to do something to mm-hmm, keep them here. Mm-hmm. And I think that may just be one way in which they can consider helping people make their homes, I don't want to really say look better, but you know,
so be livable.
Be livable.
Yeah, and, livable. And no hurricane, but certainly a cultural tsunami.
Okay. Yes. Okay. Yes. Well, I'll take that. I'll take that. But I think, you know, the city should really start thinking of ways in which they can keep the greatness of That's the right. richness of the people and the culture here in the District Absolutely. Of Columbia. Because I particularly love the city. I love the people that I meet. Yeah. Especially when I meet, they were like, oh my God, you're like an anomaly. Give me a hug. Yeah, Let's take a selfie. So that's my, because I do love homegrown people. Mm-hmm. And so I just would say, city, look at some options for maybe finding ways to keep people within their homes so they don't have to sell them off just because they can't afford them.
Yeah.
There are some ways in which they can begin to look at ways to help people stay in their homes.
And just preserve the culture. I mean, just a mm-hmm. really quick selfish plug. I did a documentary about Mary Church Terrell and her home on LaDroit mm-hmm. Park and how, mm-hmm. you know, that was on the precipice of being torn down. And her history is just amazing. And you have all of these other homes that have been built up and are very pretty, but you have this amazing home of this woman mm-hmm. who is done so much, and to lose that, to gut that, would be a hole. It would be like a hole in the heart.
But I think it's too late. The damage is done. The redevelopment is going on. The gentrification is only going to get worse. I mean, you're bringing a lot of great ideas to the table, but logic and common sense has no place in this debate relative to the city council and things like that. They're already got their plans in place.
But I just believe in people, and I believe that if mm-hmm. people begin to advocate, to harness their voices and make it known this is what we want and keep at it, it's not a one-night stand, a one-and-done. You have to stay at it so that they know exactly what it is you want. So I do believe in a process.
But I would say that that in preserving the culture, one of the things that we have seen lately is, of course, the Don't Mute DC movement, because that is something that Washingtonians, predominantly black people, but I think that even people that aren't black who have been here for a while, whether they listen to Go-Go or not, they may very well understand that that is part of the preservation of the culture. But as Renaldo did say, and one of the things that we are beginning to see is that even as, whether it's the mayor, the council, time marching on, that as things become fixed and new or newer, that they become more expensive, mm-hmm. and there is still a divide between mm-hmm. incomes of people of color in this community and others, and those people, as you suggested, may not be able to afford to live here. I mean, I always say I have a good job, but I live in Baltimore because I can't afford to live mm-hmm. here. Wow. So I think that that is something that those who can afford to live here need to not just vote and be active, but they also need to speak with their wallets and handbags. Anyway, I got to run. I want to thank all of you for coming in. Chanya Johnson, Renard Jackson, and Robin Hamilton. I really appreciate you all coming in. Look forward to having you again.
Thanks for having us.
That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Friday, May 17th. For News Director Renee Nash, reporters Taylor Thomas, Millett Green, Bramante Bryant, producer Candace Atkins, and engineer Bobby Adams and Iran Waller, I'm Harold Fisher. You can tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Now, stay tuned for The Connection. Good night, and have a wonderful weekend.
The Howard University Radio Network.